2 Corinthians 12. I'll read from verse 1. It is doubtless not profitable for me to boast. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a man in Messiah who 14 years ago, whether in the body I do not know, or whether after the body I do not know, God knows. Such a one was caught up to the third heaven. And I know such a man, whether in the body or after the body, I do not know, God knows, how he was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words, which is it is not lawful for a man to utter. Of such a one I will boast, yet of myself I will not boast, except in my infirmities. For though I might desire to boast, I will not be a fool, for I will speak the truth. But I forbear, lest any one should think of me above what he sees me to be or hears from me. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations. A thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Messiah may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Messiah's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Now, we ended at verse 6 where he says, I forbear. I'm not going to say anymore, I'm not going to make another list. I remember Derek Prince telling us a long time ago that he had so many experiences, he made the catalog of them until he realized he was making another Bible, his own Bible. So he quit. And from then on, he was very reticent about his experiences. And the same here, we find with Shaul, I forbear, lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me to be, or hears from me. Better for me to be undervalued than to be overvalued. That's what he's saying. Unfortunately, we are so prone to pride that even Shaul was in danger. Can you imagine a humble man like him, such a great man, in danger of falling into pride? That's what he tells us in verse 7. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations. There was a very real danger, and it is much more common to us when God blesses us, that's when we fall. Isn't that a paradox? That when we get the greatest blessing, that's when we are in the greatest danger. And it isn't because God doesn't want us to bless us, but because we turn things around. We become proud. We begin to think it's us, that we deserved it, that we've done something to merit this blessing. And when people come and compliment us, that's even worse. And without knowing it, they're the friends of the devil when they shower their bouquets on us. That's what happened to Hezekiah. God had healed him from mortal infection. It was a mortal infection arising from sepsis, from a boil. God had healed him. On the third day, he was well enough to go and worship in the temple. Not only that, but God saved the city Jerusalem from the army that was threatening it, that had devastated other countries. God said, I will deliver this city. And he did. Not only that, but God promised to Hezekiah I will give you 15 more years to live. And then to cap it all, to crown it all, God gave him a miraculous sign. The sun, the shadow went backwards on the sundial of his father Ahaz by 10 degrees. Well, in Babylon, 1,000 road miles away, people noticed this and they sent their ambassadors to congratulate Hezekiah that such a miracle had been performed on his behalf. Hezekiah was at the zenith, he was at the crown, he was riding the crest of the wave. Then we read, he was glad when the ambassadors came. And what did he do? Did he say, now listen, gentlemen, this is no honor to me. This is my God who has done this thing. It is because he is good. No, he did nothing of the sort. He showed them all his treasures. He showed them all the glory of his kingdom. It was me, myself, and I. A good king like Hezekiah. And we read in 2 Chronicles chapter 32, wrath came upon him and upon all Judah as a result. When the king went wrong, not only did the king suffer, but the king's people suffered as well. Now Shaul says, I was in danger. I got so many blessings. I needed something to keep my feet on the ground. I was favored with abundance of revelations. That means there were many more like the ones he'd just been describing, or like the one in verses 1 to 6, when he's taken, as it were, out of the body, into paradise, into the third heaven, into the very dwelling of God, and he could hear words that it was not possible or lawful for human beings to repeat. He lived a lot in heaven. When he speaks about the abundance of revelations, it's obvious the Lord appeared to him many times and that he had many supernatural experiences, but he says, I needed something to keep my feet on the ground. It was beginning to turn my head. He says, a thorn in the flesh was given to me. When he says given, he says, however unpleasant and unwelcome it was, it was a gift from God. You and I don't look on pain, suffering, thorn in the flesh, we don't look on those as welcome things, or let alone gifts from God. He didn't. He prayed to God, he pleaded with God 3 times, take this away from me, take this away from me. It was an extremely painful gift. When he says a thorn in the flesh, he means it was something physical. In the flesh means it was something physical. Why did God give it to him? To protect him. To protect the blessing, so that he could continue enjoying the blessing. Have you ever been jealous of people who seem to have lots of blessings? Look at Miriam, the mother of Yeshua. She was told by Simeon that she was the mother of the Messiah. But what does he say to her? For that great privilege, there was something else. A sword shall pierce through your own heart. So don't be too jealous that people have lots of wonderful experiences. If they are authentic, they have lots of suffering to go along with them, a lot of pain. And God knows how much you and I can bear. He also knows how much he can trust us. And that's another reason why he doesn't give us all the blessings and all the supernatural experiences that we ask for, because he knows that because we have such a deceitful heart, we're going to turn it around to our own harm. We're going to be lifted up with pride, for example. So God gives him that thorn in the flesh to save him from something worse. when you've got a nail deeply embedded in the wood and it's not showing either end, how are you going to drive that nail out? You've got to get it out. You use another nail. You use one nail to drive out the other. And so God, in His mercy, sometimes uses one suffering, one evil, to drive out another from us. That's one of the answers to why God's children suffer. It is to preserve us from something worse, to drive out something that's worse. The children who want to walk by themselves, when they begin to take the first steps, they think they can do it all now, and they refuse to hold on to our hand, so we let them fall and scrape their knees. Why do we do that? So that they might know that they need our help, and that they might depend on us, and that we might stop them maybe from breaking their heads or cracking their heads. One evil usually drives out another. And when God allows something unpleasant in our life, it's to preserve us from something far worse. If we've had a disappointment, it is His appointment to protect us from something that He sees that is far more dangerous, that's going to do us a lot of harm. It's like an immunization, heavenly immunization. That's what was happening to Shaul. Ezekiel, we read about, he had a vision of God. He saw the throne of God. He saw a human form occupying that throne. He said this was the likeness of the appearance of the glory of the God of Israel. He was seeing Messiah in His glory. What did God do after He'd seen that vision? He took him back to the captivity and He said, I sat there amazed 7 days, speechless. I sat where they sat. The hand of the Lord was strong upon me, His restraining hand, so that I wouldn't go out of control. Because in the holiness of God, in the light of God's holiness, He had seen the rebellion of His people. He had seen how terrible their sin was. And He says, when God took me back, I went in heat, and in the anger of my spirit. I went in anger, and in the heat of my spirit, God needed to keep His controlling hand on Ezekiel, so that He wouldn't say, you rotten lot, do you realize how great sinners you are? We have to remember He was one of them. When we go back to the book of Proverbs, chapter 25, there are two proverbs there that throw a lot of light on this. Proverbs 25, verse 16 and verse 27. Here is some good advice. Proverbs 25 and verse 16. First of all, have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. Don't seek too much glory. Don't seek too much to be set on high. It's like eating too much honey. You vomit it up. And you lose it all. Be thankful for the little tastes of honey that God gives you as you walk with Him. Be thankful and thank Him for what He does not give you, because He knows how much is enough for us. Then we go to verse 27. It is not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's own glory is not glory. But the translators had a problem there. The word for kavod, the word for glory is kavod. It's also used again, so that it could read like this. It is not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's kavod is kaved. Kavod, kaved, ka Kaved means a weight. So to seek one's own glory, to try and look after vain glory, or to seek vain glory, is a load that we are not meant to bear. You notice, is not is in italics here in the translation. It was a pun, it was a play on words. It is not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's own glory is a load. That's how it could be translated. You know what puns are on a lighter vein? You know what Samson died of? Fallen arches. Well, that's what you call a pun. And in the book of Proverbs, you have this pun. He was given a thorn in the flesh, and he says, it was a messenger of Satan to buffet me. It was some severe physical disability. The Greek word means a sharp stick, like being prodded or being gored with something sharp. When we prick ourselves with a pin, it hurts. But here he says, I was having a sharp stake driven into my body. It was so painful, it felt like that, like a sharp stake being driven into my body. They say that arthritis is like that. Maybe, I don't know, he gives us a hint of what it might have been, because he says to the Galatians, when you saw my trial and my flesh, you didn't despise me for it. In fact, you would have given your own eyes to me. So it might have been something to do with his eyes. We don't know, but it was something in his body. And he says it was to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. It was the absolutely necessary antidote to keep him depending upon God, keep him from pride. A great preacher was going home after a night of extraordinary blessing. He was a country preacher. His name was David Morgan, and the country was Wales. He was walking home with another man. There were many miles they had to cover in the dark hillside as they were walking back over the mountains to their home. And after a long silence, the man said, that was a blessed meeting, Mr. Morgan. Again a long silence, and then David Morgan said, yes. And the Lord would bless us more if he could have trusted us. Then he rang up, the night air rang out with his cry, not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but unto thy name give glory. He knew all about it. David Morgan was just an ordinary country preacher. During that time of revival in Wales, just over a century ago, he was endued with power. He was like a lion. Everything he said was clothed with power. But then when the revival was over, he was just David Morgan again. And what did he do? He never tried to work it up. He just went back to his little church. He was thankful that he had been used, and he was humble enough to accept being put by when the work was done. Not many people like that. He says, Shaul says here, it was so terrible, the pain was so terrible. I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. Grievous enough to pray over earnestly, Yeshua, when he was sweating great drops of blood, pleaded 3 times that the cup might pass from him. The suffering was so terrible. The anguish was so great. And what was God's reply? It wasn't yes. It was a qualified no. Verse 9. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, For my strength is made perfect in weakness. God promised him support in the trial rather than deliverance from it. Now you and I may be faced with a situation just like that, where we want out, and God says, no, or maybe he says, not yet, but I will help you. I'll be there to give you all the patience, the courage, the grace that you need. I'll be close to you. When we were sick as children, that's when we had mother close to us. She was often close to us. When we started getting better, she was busy in the kitchen, she was out shopping more. She wasn't so close to our bedside anymore. We didn't need it. I have a friend who was involved in a horrendous accident in northern BC, just outside Smithers, coming up over a rise. Some people in a 4x4 were overtaking another vehicle on the other side of the rise, and they met at the top. They were both traveling at 80 to 90 kilometers an hour. When she woke up, miraculously, she was still alive. The other two people and the other car died instantly. She and her husband had a heavy car. They survived, but they were burned. They had broken limbs. The face bones were broken. She had to have special traction. When I went to see her, she said to me, I'm sorry, I'm getting better. She said, when I was near the point of death, God was so near to me, I could almost touch him. So she's better now. She's living in Linden. She and her husband. God saved their lives. But you see what I mean. When it comes to a severe trial, sometimes God doesn't take away the trial, but he gives us something that we prize far more. My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Amazing. None of us should wish any severe trials on ourselves, but we have this to reassure us, that if we are in that situation, in that predicament, that's when the Lord draws near, just as he did to Shaul. So God's answers may be qualified. And what was Shaul's response? Therefore, most gladly, I would rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Messiah may rest upon me. I am content to suffer if it glorifies him. If it means that I have him near me. And so you and I find that it's all right. He'll either lift the trial from us or he'll give us the strength to cope with it. Contentment in suffering. I'm amazed at how the Shliachim, the apostles, after they had been beaten and humiliated in the Sanhedrin, departed rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for Yeshua's name. Where did that joy come from? They must have felt sore. They must have felt shamed and humiliated. But that joy God sent into their hearts. How is it that Shaul, after being whipped, he and Silas, and put in the stocks, pain from the cramps, pain from those wounds, those lash wounds which were not washed, how is it that they managed to sing praises to God? Because God helps us in those times. And we find we can do it. And we're surprised at ourselves. When he says that the power of Messiah may rest upon me, he's using the word from Shekhinah. Episkenosi. That's the Greek verb. It's a direct transliteration from Shekhinah. Are you suffering for Messiah? His Shekhinah is on you. And you experience it. You will. So he says in verse 10, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities. Fancy that. Why is that? Not because the things themselves are good. They're not. They're bad. But I take pleasure because of the end result, because of the outcome, because of the blessing that comes with it. That sugar, lump of sugar that we have to take with our medicine before they made medicine taste better. Remember, our mother used to give us a lump of sugar or a spoonful of sugar. Doesn't it remind you of Mary Poppins? A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down in a most delightful way. God gives us honey, he gives us sugar, and we'd rather have the sugar than do without the medicine. But the thing is, the medicine also does us good. It is for our good. I take pleasure. I rejoice. Why is it? For Messiah's sake. If it's for his sake who loves me, I'll do it. When you love someone, you're prepared to do a lot for them. You're prepared to suffer pain for them. If they're in pain, you wish it was you, not them. And it's the same with Messiah. For Messiah's sake, I am ready to take pleasure in infirmities, reproaches, needs, persecutions, distresses. For when I'm weak, then I'm strong. The best thing, best of it all is that in our weakness, God manifests his strength. When we want to do something for God and we find it hard, as Daniel confessed to us this morning, that's when God's power can be demonstrated more. Amos says, God strengthens the spoiled against the strong, so that the spoiled come against the fortress. He turns things around. The paradox of rejoicing in suffering. All of us, sooner or later, if not already, know what it is to suffer, or will know what it is to suffer for Messiah's sake. But when we do, his blessing rests on it. And we are so thankful, we are glad for the blessing, and as one of my friends put it, I wouldn't have done without that pain for all the world. It's not easy to talk like that because God makes us eat our words. But it is true. It is a fact. Thank God for it. The sweetness, the blessedness of this truth.